Everybody, registrars, if you could please retake your seats. Retake your seats. Thank you.
If I just want to make everywhere aware of the copies in the back of the room.
Okay, everybody, we're going to start back up again, so would you please take your seats? Good morning, everybody. This is Michele for the record. We are now moving on to the next section on our schedule, where we're getting an update from Caitlin Ter Bergen on the change of registrant policy. This is in ICANSpeak IRTPC, the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, PDPC, the change of registrant policy. So, those of you who are in the room, please take your seats. If you want to continue conversations, please step outside the tent. Over to you, Caitlin.
Thank you, Michele. For the record, this is Caitlin Ter Bergen, Registrar Relations and Contracts Manager. A couple of weeks ago, Michele and I believe James asked me to present some information on this upcoming change of registrant policy to the Registrar Stakeholder Group. We're currently in the process of reviewing draft language to the policy, and I will be presenting some of what that draft language is or how it will affect registrars and open a little Q&A about this. So the recommendation defines change of registrant as a material change to the registrant name, registrant organization, registrant email, and the administrative contact email. So anytime any of these fields are changed, it would trigger what will now be the change of registrant process under this policy. So this slide shows the steps that would take place under a change of registrant process. The first step would be for the registrar to confirm that that domain name is eligible for transfer. And in an upcoming slide, I'll go over the circumstances where a name would be ineligible for transfer.
Can you make it in presenter mode?
Oh, sorry about that. Sorry. Okay. Sorry about that. Once the registrar confirms that the name is indeed eligible for transfer, the registrar would need to obtain a confirmation from the new registrant, and that confirmation would be through a key. The key is defined in the policy as a code, PIN, or unique password that is used to facilitate a change of registrant. Thirdly, the registrar would have to obtain confirmation from the prior registrant, also through this key. Following the change, the registrar needs to notify the prior registrant and the new registrant that this change has been completed. And lastly, they would advise the prior registrant of a 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock. And that was part of the recommendation in the final report, that once a change of registrant goes through, a safeguard to the registrants would be to have a 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock. The registrar can opt out or allow registrants to opt out of this 60-day transfer lock, but the registrant would have to affirmatively opt out. The following names would be ineligible for a change of registrant, and that would be expired names that the registered name holder can no longer renew, and that's subject to the expired registration recovery policy. If the change of registrant is not properly authorized, in other words, if the PIN has not been properly transmitted from the prior registrant and new registrant to the registrar, if the name is set to a registry-imposed status, such as server transfer prohibited, and that's really to cover names that are subject to a URS or other registry-imposed lock. If there's a court proceeding in a relevant jurisdiction or an appropriate jurisdiction that would prohibit a change of registrant, and names that are subject to a TDRP or UDRP, would it be ineligible for a change of registrant? Names that could be ineligible for a change of registrant would be registrar-imposed client transfer prohibited, or if the registrar has the name locked, a dispute involving the identity of the registered name holder or the validity of the change of registrant process. The third item up there, I believe, was requested by a member of the implementation review team, and that was that the registrar has previously prohibited the new registrant from using its services. So if the registrar, if there's a known spammer and they do not want to do business with this registrant, this policy would not be a way to transfer a name to an individual that the registrar does not want to do business with. And lastly, another reason that was requested by the implementation review team was that the proposed new registrant does not meet the eligibility requirements of the TLD. So that could be a geographic restriction, for example, or any restrictions that the new TLDs have. So that concludes the overview of the process. I see James looking at me. He's a member of the implementation review team. McKaylee is also a member of the implementation review team, and so they were also members of the working group, so they know a lot about this. And if he would like to speak, or if anyone has any questions, please feel free.
Thank you, Caitlin. McKaylee, for the record, I'll hand over to James.
Thanks, and thanks, Caitlin. I thought it was a very concise presentation. There have been some questions on the list, so I just wanted to give some background to registrars since we're all in the room, is that this change of registrant procedure came out of IRTPC. I was the chair of that back in 2012 or something like that. I think it ended in late 2012. The thinking behind this was everybody has this process. This, maybe it's just as simple as I go into my control panel and I see where it says registrant James Bladel, and I just type in McKaylee Nalon, and I have simply transferred that name to McKaylee Nalon, right? But I think that what we have all learned is that the real world is a little more complicated than that. Has this new person accepted the terms of service and your contracts? Has this new person, is it a real person now that we have to verify them? Is it someone who is eligible? Is it someone who maybe you've kicked off of your platform because they violated your terms of service? So all of these questions were kind of circling around this issue. What we wanted to do was put something that was a little more formal, where it's kind of sending a notification, which was like a link that you could click, or a token password, which just says, please confirm that you want to accept this name. Please confirm that you want to receive this name. And both sides would expressly agree to becoming the registrant of a domain name. And we wanted to do that in such a way that it didn't interfere with the aftermarket, which was very active in this group. And the aftermarket folks were very concerned about any kind of locking or a burdensome thing that could disrupt their transactions and the mobility of domain names on the aftermarket. So that's why we have opt-outs, so that the aftermarket folks can put an opt-out in their terms of service that when you list a domain name for sale or make an offer to buy it, that you are opting out of that lock. So that you know, should help address those concerns. I think that for the most part, this is compatible with what everyone that we spoke to back in 2012 already is doing. You know, it may make some informal practices formal. Certainly, you know, after our last session, we're all very leery about giving compliance something new to push off on. But I think that, you know, this is going to improve some of the and standardize some of the registrant experience in the industry, so that when they go to different registrants, they know what to expect in this process. So that's the thinking, that's the context, and it's been a very difficult road to get to here. And I just wanted to say thanks to Caitlin, because she's been leading the implementation, and I'm sure she, you know, on many calls, she's bashed her head into the desk, wondering how she's ever going to herd all these cats to go in the same direction. So that's the background.
Okay, thanks, James. Just another quick comment I'll add myself as I'm on this as well, Michele, for the record. Just so people are aware, this is the result of a full PDP. So if people want to give input to it and everything else, that's perfect. But if you want to completely kill it or anything like that, we would have to actually go back to the GNSO and completely reopen things. So just so you're aware. Because we have had some, how can I phrase it, some interesting input from people who, rather than helping with the implementation, thought that they could completely undo a full PDP, which doesn't really work. I have a queue, I have Volker, then I have Joy, and then Yoav.
Yes, just one question for a better understanding. I coming into this session, I thought I understand the PDP outcome and the proposed changes to the transfer policy. Coming out of this presentation, I'm now a little bit more confused, which might be the case because you seemed to have been using transfer and change of registrant interchangeably. So when you say transfer, do you actually mean an inter-registrar transfer, or do you mean a transfer of the ownership of the domain name?
Sorry, that was my mistake, Volker. I've been trying to use change of registrant instead of inter-registrant transfer because it sounds too similar to inter-registrar transfer. So if I said anything about transfer, that was a mistake. In terms of the 60-day lock, that is a 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock. And that's in the event of a mistaken change of registrant, the prior registrant would be notified and it would still be housed in the same registrar for 60 days if there happened to be a mistake, if the registrant did not opt out of that 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock.
Thanks, Caitlin. Joy.
Hi, maybe I didn't read it correctly. Your slide one say that 60-day locks, you have to send a notice to the prior registrant. Isn't it supposed to be go to the new registrant?
The notice goes to both the prior and the new registrant, but the prior registrant would have been the entity that would have that would potentially opt out of that lock. So the notice could say, you have opted out of this lock, or it could say the name is now locked for 60 days. It would go to both parties.
I would think that the new registrant would be the one that should know that he cannot transfer the name out within the 60 days. The name already left the old registrant, the prior registrant. Okay, I just want to clarify. Yeah. And I have a second question is, we found that some registrar, they every time a domain name is updated, then they will put a 60-day lock there, they cannot transfer, and then update including the renew. Okay, so I just want to see what your take on that.
I think this policy limits the 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock to a change of four fields, which is registrant name, registrant organization, registrant email, and administrative contact email.
Okay, so a registrar can just, it's a registrar's business policy that if this name is renewed today, and the name cannot be transferred out tomorrow, but within 60 days from it. Is that okay with ICANN, right? As a registrar business policy to prevent a new domain name within 6 days that cannot be transferred out?
Hey, Joyce, this is Mike Zupke, ICANN staff for the record. So what we're talking about would not change the existing rules in the transfer policy that say there are certain bases for which you are allowed to deny a transfer, and there are certain ones for which you may not. And I'm speaking without having the transfer policy in front of me, but I don't believe that renewal is an acceptable basis for denying a transfer.
Okay, the reason I brought it up because it happened to us, some of the names that couldn't transfer to us because they just renew. Thank you.
Okay, before I go to Yoav, we have one question from Dan Rogers on remote. What if the current / prior registrant is invalid and therefore can't receive the email?
Thank you for the question, Dan. If the PIN that is referenced in the policy cannot be properly transmitted to the prior registrant and therefore not properly transmitted to the registrar, then that would not be a proper change of registrant and the registrant shouldn't be changed.
Yeah, I think in that question, sorry, James, jumping in on that, it really should go through the invalid WHOIS process first and get that problem fixed before you try to do a change of registrant. Unless, and I believe I'm guessing because I don't see Dan's question, unless he's saying the change of registrant is the remedy to the invalid WHOIS?
It's Michele for the record. He hasn't actually put anything further on that, but I think he was referring primarily to the email address as opposed to a full change of the registrant record.
I wanted to jump in. Dan, you might be talking about a, quote, immaterial change to someone's email address. So if I were to change the first letter of my name, Caitlin with a K, to Caitlin with a C, the policy does define a material change. And so if it seems to be an immaterial change, like a one-letter change to a name, then that wouldn't be a change of, that would not invoke this policy. And material currently is largely left to the discretion of the registrar to determine is this a material change.
Thanks, Caitlin. Yoav.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. First, I may have missed it. What's the timetable? When do we need to comply with this policy? And do you want me to ask the second one, too?
I can answer the first question first. Thank you, Yoav. This is still draft language. It hasn't gone through public comment, and so it will go through public comment probably within the coming weeks, and all registrars are welcome to submit the text to your companies and provide public comments. So that's at least 60 days of public comment and reply period. I am guessing that the earliest this would be effective would be January of 2016.
So this still needs to go through the GNSO Council for approval?
No.
The public comment?
Yes. But then there would be a reasonable time to within which to implement the policy, and we would ask the implementation review team, which is several registrars are a part of, for reasonable time to implement something like this.
Just to add to that, Michele, for the record, because I think this is causing a little bit of confusion. Essentially, to answer your question and to address the kind of quizzical looks I'm getting from various people around the table, the PDP ran its course. The PDP had a number of recommendations. This is one of them. So all that went through the GNSO and was signed off on. What this is the implementation aspect of it, where you're taking the policy, converting it and operationalizing it, and the implementation working group has been dealing with this on and off over the last couple of months and has been drafting language. Registrars should, you know, if they're interested in getting more involved with this, contact Caitlin and harass her. Sorry, Caitlin. And then, of course, it will go to public comment within the next few weeks, at which point, of course, we can also put in, well, we individually or whatever can submit extra comments on that, but it doesn't go back to the GNSO. I don't think there's any reason why it would, unless I'm missing something completely. Am I? No, I don't think so. So the dates for compliance haven't been published because you can't comply with a policy that hasn't actually been written. So don't worry about that yet.
Yeah, okay.
Yoav, I did have one quick comment. Sorry, this is Caitlin again for the record. I know that McKaylee already did send a draft of the policy to the Registrar Stakeholder Group approximately 2 weeks ago. We can resend it. And if you have any questions, you can email me directly, and I'll make sure the implementation review team is aware of all concerns. Thank you.
Okay, I have one question.
I had a second question.
Okay.
Which is, I got a little confused from this discussion about the email, and I'm getting a little worried about it. Because I just want to give you an example. Someone registered the domain name, put in their email. That email is not relevant anymore. They lost the account in Gmail. They opened a new one. Now they want to change that email. So did you just say you cannot do that? Because you cannot confirm using the code. That's what I heard. That email is not active anymore. They're not going to get that link or code to their old email. They want to change it to their new email. How is this going to work?
Yo, this is Mike Zupke again. So one aspect of the policy that we didn't have in this level of detail on the slides, but the only way to get the key or the PIN is not email. You could log into your control panel to obtain the PIN. If you've lost credentials, your control panel, whatever normal ways that your registrar has of authenticating you in order to transmit the PIN to you, those would all still be acceptable.
Okay, I have one question from remote, and then I'll go to you, Rob. Sorry, I'm prioritizing people who are not physically in the room in Los Angeles because there are challenges and everything else. So the question is from Benny, and I can't scroll back up now. Hold on a second. Damn it. I can. Benny from Nordreg, one of the new TLDs has removed the 60-day lock for transfer on a new domain. Will this interfere with this lock?
This is Caitlin again for the record. This is a separate requirement, and so I don't think that would interfere with that lock, but the registrar, again, can offer an opt-out. If the registered name holder is not chosen to opt out, following a change of registrant, the name would have to be a 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock. I hope that answered the question.
McKaylee, can Benny tell us who? Because I would like to see which registry is going to take that. That's a registrar prerogative, and I don't believe they can remove that capability from a registrar.
Benny is falling remotely, so maybe he'll update us.
Yeah, Benny, if you want to send that to the list or something, I'd be very curious to see that how that plays out in the real world, how a registry's terms of service would somehow trump an ICANN consensus policy.
Okay, thanks. He's said he's going to check into it. I've got Rob Villeneuve in the room, and then I have Dan Rogers remote.
Hi, Rob Villeneuve. I haven't reviewed the policy thoroughly, so this question might be totally answered already, but for the change of registrant and administrative contact email, does it take into account privacy and proxy services? So would a customer enabling a privacy or proxy service or disabling a privacy or proxy service need to trigger an actual change of registrant procedure?
I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question properly. So if someone registers a domain name and then were to enact a privacy or proxy, would it trigger a change of registrant?
Correct.
I believe, looking at the language of the policy, the plain language of the policy, the answer would be yes, because the registrant email is changing. And so, again, that might... Oh, Mike, did you want to say anything? Okay. Yes, I believe the answer would be yes. It would trigger the change of registrant, and the PIN would have to be exchanged.
So this is Mike also, Mike Zupke again, with just a little bit more clarification. And one more thing that's not in this level of detail on the slides, but as a practical matter, if the domain name is not leaving the customer's account, the entire process is essentially invisible to the customer, because the customer is going to receive a PIN from the registrar, give it to itself, give it back to the registrar. So we don't actually expect registrars to make that process happen. So if the if the domain name stays in one customer account, the customer is authenticated, you know, through login or whatever. You know, so in the case of a proxy service, if your registrar allows the customer to manage its domain name in one account, regardless of whether a proxy service is the registered name holder or not, then as a practical matter, this is all invisible to your customer. If the name actually has to be pushed to another account, that's when this process of exchanging the PIN would really become effective.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I've closed the queue. I'm going to taking the one question remotely, and then we have to move location to join with the registries in the Constellation Room, which is back in the main building at the plaza level. For those of you who were at the registry registrar thing yesterday, I think it's the same room. Anyway, okay, so we had one question from remote, from Dan Rogers again. Would anything prevent registrars from including a blanket opt-out for all customers in their standard registration agreement?
Thank you for the question, Dan. The policy currently requires that the prior registrant, the registrar offers an opt-out, and the prior registrant affirmatively accepts the opt-out or affirmatively opts out of the 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock. So that would be ultimately a question for compliance. If the registrar has in their registration agreement that they opt out of the 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock following the change of following a change of registrant, then the registrar could present that to the compliance department if a complaint was filed.
And this is Mike again. Just, you know, one small point in that you know, we recognize that's in a way that's against the registrar's interest to make transfers away easier. So, you know, to the extent that we do that, we see that as sort of a consumer-friendly thing. But we also, you know, see this as an anti-hijacking measure. So I think there's, I think that sort of the marketplace is going to probably solve that whether that's a good or a bad thing in itself.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Joy, please make it very, very.
Yes, I just want to comment. I think that ICANN should be really just working on the inter-registrar transfer policy instead of this registrant transfer, because every registrar has a different platform, different design. And if somebody, a registrant wants to change name from Jiang Do to Stupid Do, and, you know, it's really has nothing to do with ICANN's policy or anything. Okay, my comment.
Okay, thank you. So everybody, thank you, Caitlin and Mr. Zupke. We are moving to the Constellation Room, which is down at the plaza level in the main building. The registries are running a couple of minutes late, so we are okay on time. But if you could all move down there, and we'll continue on there. Thank you.
Just the Constellation Room was the room for the GNSO Council sessions over the weekend and the session that Jen had with the registries yesterday, just for those who haven't learned the names yet.
Thanks, James.
Which level?